in a rut. I'm quite happy with what I've got. People might say that I should strive for more. Wednesday night saw the kickoff to the 2019-2020 season, a season which hopefully and expectedly will be quite a remarkable season in the history of Celtic as we move towards 9 in a row, and then to 10, and then 11, and so on. But this was their first step in the European campaign, and we were away in Sarajevo. So I dialed up a man who's been in person to a number of Celtic away pre-season friendlies, Mr. Anthony Murray. He lives just over the border, and we discussed the Celtic performance against Sarajevo, the pre-season games, and where we think the squad is. So, straight away, on to a review of the game that takes us through almost certainly to the next round of the Champions League qualifying. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Anthony Murray. So after last season where sometimes podcasts were a bit sparse, now we have two podcasts inside a week. So I'm joined by Anthony Murray. How are you doing, Anthony?
Hi, Harry. How's things? Good.
I'm excellent, thanks. I was going to say for the people who can't see this, but that's every single person listening, bar me.
Right.
Your beard's coming along.
It is. It hasn't been touched since before the summer, so it's getting pretty scary.
So, big game last night as we record this. Let's talk about it. So, first of all, the team. What did you think of the team? So to go through, to remind everybody, it was Bain in goals. Interesting thing, Ayer at right back, Simonovic and Beto on the two centre-halves, with the new guy at left back, Brown and McGregor, middle, Mikey Johnson, James Forrest and Christie, with Edward up front. So tell me what you thought of the team.
Really happy that Mikey Johnson gets straight in the team, and Christie, because I think they're both quite similar players, but they're both players I'd pay to watch, and players that I think are young enough to improve and have both shown that they're damn good. That's a policy I would embrace, playing those guys every single game, basically. Good to see Edward. You know, Edward's a player, because, you know, he's picked up the odd injuries here and there. You're never 100% sure if he's going to be in the team, but good that he's starting the season, ready to go. Glad that the left back, is it Bolly?
Yeah.
Let's call him Bolly.
Let's call him Bolly. Go with Bolly.
Glad to see him, you know, turning up and going straight into the team. Although, when I first saw photos of him the other week, I was kind of hoping he was a centre and a half. Just because I don't want us to be, you know, I fear the fact we're buying a good left back because of the implication, which, you know, we all know what that is. So, but pleased to see him there, and you know, if the worst is going to happen, at least we've got another good left back.
Do you know what? I think it's funny, for 2 years we've talked about the fact that Kieran Tierney is playing on his own, and that we need two centre-halves so that Kieran Tierney has got somebody. The minute we sign two left-backs, the minute we sign a second left-back, everybody's saying, well, that's it, Tierney's off.
Yeah, fear the worst.
But I think it is.
Possibly, probably. One thing I've got an issue with, which I don't know, in the last podcast I was on, I was talking about the phasing out of Brown over time.
Yeah.
And I've come to a different conclusion. We don't need to phase out Brown. We need to change Brown. We need to do a reverse McNamara on Brown. Brown would be a brilliant right back. We don't have a right back. Brown would be a brilliant right back. Beaton is a centre mid. Ayers a centre half. And Brown could have played on the right. You know, I think that would have been the better use of those three players.
I did think, on that sort of right-back element of it, if you're Tony Ralston, you know you've got no career at Celtic. because pre-season we've been playing Ayer and Simonovic as the two centre-halves, and the first time we get to a competitive game, he puts Ayer at right back and puts, as you say, Beaton, who has only played, he's come on at the end of last season as a midfielder for Lennon, he slots into centre-half. Ayer gets shipped out to right back, also you don't have to play Ralston.
I think I witnessed the moment that possibly that Ralston's career was on, because I'm on record saying, you know, give young players a chance, give Ralston the minutes, he won't let you down. In the two pre-season games, he did two things that you can't get away with. In the first one, he tried to switch a ball to the left back and he duck hooked it into the opposition dugout. Do you know what I mean? It was just that was crap. Uh-huh. And then his first ball out to him in the second preseason friendly, literally a under his foot and out the park job. And it's like, you're right, you might get away with one of them, but two games back to back just doing something that is utter rotten. You know, you're just falling down the pecking order. You can't be trusted. You're not that good, basically.
Yeah.
God bless him, you know?
Yeah, so interesting. I don't know if anybody else's opinion listening to this about Brown at right back.
I've done it in FIFA.
Does it work in FIFA?
He's fast and he's hard, and he's actually more intelligent and tactically aware than a lot of players are. And it's only right back. It's a piece of piss. Anyone can do it.
I'll take your word for it. The rumour tonight is we are going to be signing a guy whose name now escapes me. It's Tommy Smith, the Huddersfield right back.
I'd be happy with that. I mean, there's a sort of, as much as I complain about picking up journeymen from English football, there's examples I've seen where it's worked out. Like when we signed Craig Burley. Mm-hmm. It's like Craig Burley was a crap right wing back in a crap Chelsea team, and he came to Scotland and turned into a 15 goal midfielder and was absolutely brilliant. Now, I hate Craig Burley. I think Craig Burley's probably the biggest arsehole ever played for Celtic, but he was a good Celtic player. Mm-hmm. Which is all I really care about when you're pulling on the shirt. So if we sign this journeyman English right back and he comes and does a shift, yeah, good luck to him.
So that's the any other comments on the teams, the players on the park? Anybody, you know, noticeable that Griffiths was on the bench, Sinclair was on the bench, Julian was on the bench, got onto the bench. Any other thoughts on players in and around the team that were there
just,
or not?
Just to dwell on Ayer, I'm just, do you know what I mean? When you have a player that's got good at something, I think you have to keep him where he belongs. And I think Ayer is, you know, a centre half.
Yeah.
I read some people on Twitter today saying, oh, he's so good, we have to push him up into midfield. That's not realistically what's going to happen with his career.
No.
You know, he's not going to convert back into a midfielder now. And I don't think his physique would really allow for that.
Also, it's a bit of a false logic to me, because the concept behind it seems to be because he's too good to be a centre-half. Well, actually, I'd quite like your centre-halves to be really good footballers. and not just guys who hoof the ball up the park.
Yeah. Like, I was, in my own playing days, I was an extremely mediocre midfielder, but I was a bloody good centre-half. Uh-huh. You know, and it's an easier thing to do. But, yeah, you know.
I also, in my schoolboy football level, I was a goalkeeper, and I always liked playing with an intelligent centre-half. Because it then meant you had somebody close that you could who you could communicate with,
yeah.
And if you had a good footballing player centre half, it bailed you out a lot for the inadequacies of other members of the back four.
Yeah,
because it was a guy who could read the game, and he could read when somebody was about to make a mistake and go and cover for it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think I described it as a reverse McNamara earlier, but I'd also describe it as a Mascherano. I don't understand why, certainly domestically, Brown couldn't play centre-half. You know, it's not like every game we play is a game. You know, modern football is not the same as it was. You're not always going up against a Peter Crouch or a Zlatan Ibrahimovic. It's not all about a giant that you're playing against. Brown could play centre-half for years for Celtic, at least domestically.
The only caveat I would put to that would be, and we'll get to it in a minute, the goal that we lost last night. Because he was picking up the guy who knocked it down for the guy to put it in the back of the net.
Right, fair point. And then I guess how far back do you go again? The corner's all about Jozo.
Yeah.
But it's that classic Celtic thing, though, isn't it? That a guy makes one mistake and he gets punished for it.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's so Celtic. That a guy that, when there's a fault line on them and you're like, oh, I hope he does well today, you know, he just... The thing that will go bad. So, which is what happened with Jozo's header back. Yeah,
we're second guessing because that was about 15 minutes into the game. So how did you feel the first 15 minutes had gone?
My main concern watching it was the pitch. It was funny because I don't live that far away. Well, theoretically, I don't live, as the crow flies, I'm not that far from Bosnia, I guess. And I was stunned to turn it on and see it looking like Glasgow on a November afternoon. You know, just absolutely chucking it down. When, it was blue skies here.
Uh-huh.
So that really surprised me. And then there was that first run up the left by, I think, Ed Odson, or it might have been Bolly, when the pitch did that newly laid pitch thing.
Uh-huh.
Right, it just breaks.
Yeah,
you know, the first guy he tried to turn a guy and the ground just went underneath him, and at that point I sent a message to friends saying, oh, by the end of this game it's going to look like the Ronnie Radford goal. This pitch is going to be absolutely destroyed. And I was actually surprised by the end how little that had happened, considering how easily it looked like it happened on that game.
Yeah, because it was that bit where if somebody turned quickly,
anytime
a divot the size of, like, you know, if you're a golfer, like the size of divot that Tiger Woods would churn up with a pitching wedge in the Open, it's a huge big divot would come if just somebody would just turn quickly.
I think what you saw from Scott Brown as well, I saw him replacing his divots. he's clearly a golfer. Because
yes.
I saw him, there was a couple of close-ups. He's like, he's fixing it. He's like, oh, he knows his stuff.
Getting his pitching marked out.
So that was my first concern at the start of the game. But in terms of how we were playing, you can usually get a pretty quick instinct for how good the opponent is. And also the fact that it is the first qualifying stage. Even before the game, I convinced myself, like, these guys can't be very good.
Mm-hmm.
And then when there was no major frights in the first 15 minutes to make me think, oh, you know, these guys are good. You know, really, it was more seeing Mikey Johnson and Christie and McGregor making quite confident, progressive first touches. Bowley had some nice touches early on, so I kind of felt quite relaxed. I was annoyed by Edwards' first few touches, but I mean, that's classic Edwards.
Yeah.
He just sit him down with a pile of Henry Larsson DVDs and just say, this is what he did for the first 20 minutes of every game. Just kept the ball.
I think I've said before, there's bits of him that remind me a bit of Mark Viduka.
Yeah.
And the Mark Viduka for 20 minutes of a game, you be completely anonymous, lazy, terrible first touch, and then going to score a hat-trick.
Yeah, but the fact that McGregor and Christie and Mikey Johnson were having nice touches kind of settled me down, and I was at no point was I worried, which is funny. It sets up there's the cross in the box, Jozo puts it out for a corner. And this is the funniest thing I read today. I read that the Guardian's article on the game, I had nothing to do at work, I was filling the time, I guess, and it was an Associated Press article, but it was funny how it worded it. It said Celtic were stunned to let in a goal, and at that point, I think whoever wrote this doesn't understand Celtic in Europe.
Yeah, someone has never seen a Celtic away performance in Europe. Because like, any Celtic fan would say, and as per, we let in a stupid goal.
If I was synced up to some kind of heart monitor, you know, throughout the game, at the point where that goal goes in, it wouldn't even beep, beep. Do you know what I mean? It wouldn't even, there'd be no irregular beep. It's just like, all right, so we've let in a stupid goal from a corner. That's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, so a funny use of the word by a so-called journalist, I guess.
The thing that struck me was they then panned to the crowd. And the way that they were reacting, I thought, you are absolutely stunned to have gone 1-0 up against Celtic here. You cannot believe it. And I think that was also the attitude of the players on the park. Because much as they were not really threatening, from the moment they scored, they disappeared out of the game completely. I mean, they were just nowhere near it. It was almost as if they thought, well, we shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't be achieving it. Before the game, I spoke to someone who had knowledge of the team, and they said that Sarajevo were better than the level that we would expect to play at that stage of the competition.
Yeah, so better than the Red Imps or something like that. Yeah. But still.
But about the level of a team that we would face in the second round that we would think we should comfortably beat them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when they went one up, I thought, the thing that does get you, you're always then thinking, right, are we then just going to do something stupid like lose this game 1-0 away from home and go and win 3-4-0 at Celtic Park, and we should have beaten them comfortably away? There is a part of you thinking that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's not impossible. I remember, to go back to the Red Imps game, I remember the, as I was saying to you, you know, off mics before, that this time of year, I'm usually travelling around Europe, going to random pubs, watching Celtic Champions League qualifiers. And I remember that one, the second Red Imps game, I didn't even bother finding a pub to watch it. I was travelling around Italy. And it was just like, right, we're 1-0 down, but we're going to go through.
Yeah, because the funny thing about the Red Imps game, it was, and I suppose it was maybe the Red Imps game that had me thinking the way I did last night. Because during the Red Imps game, I just kept waiting for the point where we would then go on and score 3-4 goals. and it just never happened.
Yeah.
So, they score. I was doing a bit of a wind-up of St. Anthony, who always wants people on the posts and always wants man marking at a corner. And I was just pointing out that if you watch that corner again, it demonstrates there is no perfect system, because the guy who puts the ball in the back of the net, the reason he puts the ball in the back of the net is because Christie's man marking him. So the guy runs, Christie runs with him, and then the guy stops. And it's a bit like a cartoon character where the cartoon character can't stop because he just keeps running so much. So Christie just keeps going and the guy stops. And then because Edward's on the post, the guy's in loads of space, where if it was a zonal system, there'd have been a guy standing exactly where the ball dropped.
I'd blame Edward to an extent. Like if I'd been Edward in that situation, I'd be blaming myself. I was saying I should have reacted quicker there.
Yeah, because the problem is, as the ball's coming across, he's backing, because he's taking two steps off the post. So he's actually going backwards and I should be on the post. And then realises, no, I should be back where I was standing. And by that point, guy puts the ball in the back of the net.
But yeah, it was slightly lethargic on his part, I thought. But
Edward,
like I say,
doing something lethargic.
Yeah, maybe it's me prejudging him. But yeah, I'd have thought, yeah, like I say, if that had been me, I'd have been thinking, damn it, hand up. I should have reacted faster there, because that was a loose ball I could have got to if I'd moved a bit quicker.
So from there, as I said earlier, for me, it then just turned into the Celtic dominance show. So what really kicked it off was we made it one each within 5 minutes. Mikey Johnson. So you want Mikey Johnson to succeed? So talk us through the goal.
It's quite funny. I watched it back earlier, and he'd gone on a couple of little dribbles previously. You know, some further down the wing, some moving in the middle, and he'd kind of get the ball caught between himself, or he'd get dispossessed or tackled or whatever, or he'd poked away a weak pass or whatever. But on that occasion, he kind of did all of the above. You know, they kind of closed him out, didn't they? Like two or three of them.
Yep.
And he kind of, it didn't look like the most deliberate sort of reverse spin, but the ball squirted out to where he needed it to be, and then he just clunked it. Just he couldn't have caught it any better. You know, just flew into the net. So a great start to the season, and you know, that's the kind of goal you want to see. I remember when Sean Maloney scored the hoof against Rangers in the League Cup.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of like that moment. It was kind of like, you kind of always thought he would and could score that goal, but he hadn't done it up until then.
Yep.
So for them to really catch one, it was really satisfying when Maloney did it, who then went on to have a great season. And then, so Mikey Johnson's done the same. You know, he's shown he can do it. So he's basically, for me, got licensed to shoot every time he hits the ball, you know, until it gets silly, you know. But I think he's got the talent that he'll probably deliver more often than not. You know, I think he really looks like a good player.
Yeah, and I think what will really make a difference for him in terms of, you know, occasionally he seems to get, when he loses it, he seems to come out, get taken off the ball a bit too easily. What will really change is if he matures a wee bit. Brendan Rodgers' favourite phrase, maturation. if he beefs out a wee bit. I mean, not massively. I'm not talking like suddenly just become a bit broader and a bit chunkier.
Yeah.
And have a bit more upper body strength to be able to hold people off a bit more. You don't want him actually to become too big and bulky and strong. You just want him to have a wee bit more upper body strength to then be able to hold people off and keep going through them. So you're happy with that, and then we go on and win the game. So talk us through the next two goals.
The second one was Edwards, yeah?
Yeah.
And it was at that point where I was kind of getting frustrated with Edward for not having the greatest game in the world. And it was McGregor Christie again, wasn't it?
It was.
Sort of, and
Christie did the wee flick off to him in the box, and then Edwards scored goals like that before. He's got fantastic feet, and then he's going and going, and everybody's thinking he's going to take a shot, and the keeper goes down because he gets to the point where the keeper thinks he must be about to hit it. And so the keeper goes down, then he hits it, and he takes it over the keeper.
Yeah, it was a great striker's goal to be on his, you know, weaker foot and to just basically, you know, pass it into the centre of the goal, you know, where it had to go.
Yeah.
And so it's classic Edward, isn't it? You know, he does pop up when we need him, and tucks away the goal. And I think after that point, he had more better touches.
Mm-hmm.
He was coming deeper and spinning and facing them. And he had a few wee dribbles that might not have gone anywhere, but he wasn't hiding. You know, he got into the game and was well involved.
So the substitutions that we did were Hayes came on for Bolly, Sinclair came on, and Morgan came on. So how did you think the subs did?
I think Hayes did okay. I mean, I'm really not Hayes fan at all. And I think anyone that saw his pre-season friendly against St Gallen would be moving towards my camp with regards to the this guy's no good enough.
Yeah.
But if he's going to be our third choice left back, that's okay with me. I was getting annoyed by Celtic TV. I mean, obviously it's, you know, sort of Pravda sort of coverage that Celtic players can do no wrong. But their take on Johnny Hayes' Celtic career was like, you know, it was hashtag fake news. Do you know what I mean? It was like, oh, we know how good Johnny Hayes is. It's like, we really don't. And if you've been paying attention, you know, you'd realise that. But I mean, he didn't do anything. Well, the first thing he did was a stupid throw-in that I think Christie just looked at him like, what was that? You know, it was that sort of thing. But then ultimately he just kept the ball, didn't he? Gave it to Brown, gave it to McGregor. Pleased to see who the other two, Morgan and Sinclair.
Yeah.
I've got a take on Morgan. I really like Morgan, and I really want Morgan to be a Celtic player and do well. And the thing that I think I praised him for a while ago, I'm no longer convinced is true.
Which
in
is?
In that, you know, he's spoken at length about how two-footed he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that idea that a player believes he is two-footed.
Yep.
I'm not convinced he's as two-footed as he believes he is. Do you know what I mean? I saw him, I watched the Sunderland playoff.
Uh-huh.
And at one point, he had a free kick out on the right, and he took it with his left foot. And it was your kind of classic weaker foot cross. You know, kind of not enough whip, not enough dip, not enough speed. It was a kind of puffed ball.
Yep.
Which is what you do with your weaker foot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fine if you're forced back in and you just want to get it in the box, but you shouldn't be taking free kicks like that if you've got a stronger weapon with your right foot.
Mm-hmm.
Then use that. And again, I was at the preseason game in Vienna, and he did okay second half, but he was doing that. He was basically, I think he came on for Forrest played in the middle that day, but he'd come on the right. And what he needs to do is do what Forrest does. You know, you don't see Forrest messing around with his weaker foot, you know, unless he pops one in and like.
No, I was going to say. However, he should have used his weaker foot last night.
When scooped one over the bar.
When he scooped over the bar, when he tried to do that outside of his foot thing, when if he just hit it with his left foot, he'd have probably scored.
Yeah. I think I've seen Forrest score that goal enough to let him away with that. I have no issue with Forrest doing that. But in terms of dribbling past players, you know, Forrest does not use his left foot. You know, mm-hmm. It's very much touch, 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 go, or come back. You know, Forrest keeps it simple. And I think maybe Morgan could learn from that, right? All fair and well using your weaker foot when it needs, but if you're just trying to beat a guy, just concentrate on your stronger side and go with it. I think that would be the advice I'd give him. And he sets up the third goal by doing exactly that.
Yeah.
He does push it out down the right, and he did well there. It was a nice ball in. And it was actually a lovely goal. I thought it was scrappier last night than I watched it back this morning. And it was a tidier goal than I thought. You know, it's not like it bounces around the box or anything. You know, Sinclair takes the touch and then straight away, bang, you know, back heel into the goal. It was a lovely goal.
Mm-hmm.
It was better than the one he scored against Aberdeen. I thought the Aberdeen one was kind of scrappy, but I thought it was a really nice goal. And I think that's what we need. I would rather my Celtic players were hungry and, you know, angry and itching to play than assuming they were getting a start. You know?
Yeah.
Complacency comes from players that are guaranteed a game, mm-hmm. obviously. And if being out of the team is going to drive Sinclair towards being a better player, then brilliant. That's great news. I'm really happy with that.
So we comfortably won 3-1. Are you expecting us to make any changes? Are you expecting players to be rested and some of the players who didn't play Tuesday night to get a game next week in the return leg?
No, not in the first half. I'd expect that. Well, we've got a friendly on at the weekend, don't we, against the French team. I'd expect that to be a pub team, you know, a real reserves that day. And there's no point wasting energy. Maybe give Julian a run out. But beyond that, you know, last night starting 11, just completely rest them and basically start with the same team next week. Unless Julian plays himself into the team. Unless, you know, Neil Lennon's listened to the podcast and realised Scott Brown's a right back.
I didn't see that.
Or maybe we buy Tommy Smith or whatever his name was.
Back to your comments about the what the consequences of signing a left back mean for Kieran Tierney. As far as I understand, we are looking to still sign another left back.
Oh, jeez, oh.
If that gives you an indication of where we think Kieran Tierney will be playing.
I wouldn't let him go for less than 25. I'd just be really stubborn about it. I'd say, I wouldn't sell my Arsenal. Just go, hey, Arsenal. What if I'd sell him to Napoli for less than I'd sell my Arsenal.
But what if, we'll exclude Arsenal and Napoli from this conversation. What if one team came in at 25 million and 5% sell on, and another team was at 22 million but there was a 25% sell on?
It depends where he goes. I mean, there's some clubs he's going to be, he's a great player and he's going to do well, but if he goes to a club that isn't very good, mm-hmm, I don't know. I'm like,
suppose the other thing is, if he went straight to, not that he would, see, if he went straight to Man City, there's an argument that the sell on clause is a waste of time, because who's going to buy,
yeah,
for more than £25 million Kieran Tierney from Man City?
I mean, he could. I mean, how, to ask the question, how much is Andy Robertson worth now in the modern market? Do you mean that's a 60, 70 million footballer?
Yeah.
And if Kieran Tierney signs for Arsenal, plays one Super Sunday game against Everton and plays a blinder, all of a sudden he's worth 50 million as well, which is annoying, but that's the way it is in that league.
Yeah.
You know, a Scottish guy goes down there, puts a good game in the Premier League, and he's worth double.
So here's an idea that somebody put to me, that actually some of the European clubs do this. See, instead of doing the equivalent, you know, the equivalent of selling Van Dijk to Southampton and having a big sell-on clause, what they argued was, another way around it would be, loan him. Loan your top player out for a year. And then sell, and then you sell him at a much higher price.
But is there the guarantee that that happens? That's a risk to take. I never understand.
You know, the idea, so if Arsenal want him and we think he's worth 40 million and Arsenal say we wouldn't be above 25, because the problem is he's only played in Scotland and we know what Scotland's like. Right, I tell you what then, you can have him on loan for 12 months and at the end of 12 months the purchase price is 40 million quid. And if they've had, if he's the player we think he is, when they've had him for 12 months, they will definitely want him and they pay the 40 million quid. And if he's not the player, then we get him back and he was never the player that we thought he was anyway.
It just feels like a lose. I don't know, you wouldn't want to see him on loan. There's just something dirty about that, isn't it?
I've not paid enough attention to realise what this person was saying was, you know, like, top Spanish clubs, just the level, you know, Atletico Madrid, Atletico Bilbao, Valencia, that level of player, that level of club will do that.
Yeah.
They will loan a player out for 12 months with an option to buy at a much higher price.
But then there's also players that I've seen on loan, you know, usually at the Milan clubs or something like that, and they just kind of, like, so I'm trying to think of an example. Like when that Morata went from Real Madrid to Juventus, I guess that's an example of it, where Real were banking on him doing well and his stock going up, which it did at the time. It was only when he moved to England that his stock dropped. I don't know. I'm
with you, by the way. I don't like the idea that you loan out your best player so you don't actually get the money for 12 months.
Yeah,
I understand the concept behind it, which is it's a way of getting better money. So instead of doing the, okay then, we think he's great, so we'll sell him to you for 25, but we want a massive sell on because we think he's better than 25. So the way around that to try is, I tell you what we'll do, we'll give you him for a year, you'll then find him irreplaceable and you'll pay her 40 million quid. And actually, the reason why you'll have to pay the 40 million, because if you won't pay the 40 million, people will have seen him perform in the English Premiership, will know what he's capable of, and we would sell him to somebody else for 40 million.
Yeah.
That's the concept.
I really don't understand why better clubs than Arsenal aren't in for him. You know, I mean, there's other clubs that need a left back right now.
I think it's that basic thing of, until we are playing at a better level in European football and beating, you know, we lift ourselves from 46th to 21st European coefficient and going to places like Dortmund and winning, until we are doing that, it's difficult for us to get above 25 million quid for players, because they'll always have that reticence of, yeah, but the bulk of his football's in Scotland. It's not...
I think there'd be some kudos that would be given to the... It's not like, you know, it's not like Celtic fans are sitting gushing about, you know, Johnny Hayes and Michael Lustig and even Scott Brown. We gush about Wanyama and Van Dijk and Dembele, and we gush about Kieran Tierney. You know, these are the guys that legitimately are brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think Celtic fans kid themselves on. I mean, I love Lee Griffiths, but I'm not going to tell you Lee Griffiths is a 60 million footballer. But I would have told you Wanyama was. I would have told you Van Dijk was. And, you know, I'll tell you Kieran Tierney is. So I think at this point, when there's been so many good ones, some of the smart clubs... I mean, just look at Arsenal. Maybe are they finally waking up to the realisation that in a parallel universe, they signed Van Dijk and Wanyama from Celtic?
I remember...
Were miles better than they were?
Yeah, I remember... I mean, I know Fraser Foster's, you know, gone down to not even third choice at Southampton, but I think that's down to injury, lack of confidence in the quality of Stevie Woods, a goalkeeping coach. I think those three things together. But I remember when Arsenal were struggling to stay in the top four, thinking, if Arsenal came up here and said, Celtic, there's 20 million quid and we'll buy Foster, Van Dijk and Wanyama off you, they could have, at that time they could have got all three probably for 20 million quid, and they would have turned them, and immediately they would have turned themselves,
all we were 50 million, and
they would have turned themselves into a top three team with those three players.
I genuinely believe that, and the fact that two of them played in the European Cup final this year might suggest that's not far off the truth. You know, they're great footballers, and that's what I'm saying about Tierney. I genuinely believe Tierney's of that level.
So people will be getting agitated because they'll be saying, but he doesn't want to go and he's not going, and, you know, so we'll move on. So we've won the game, we've won the time, we'll be through to the next round. So you've been to some pre-season friendlies. I think pre-season games, a lot of the time they tell you, they don't necessarily tell you about much about the players that you already know are good, but I think sometimes pre-season games can tell you about the players that you are unsure of, and they can, and they don't necessarily tell you that he's going to be great, but what they can often do is just confirm your thoughts that no, he's not going to be the guy. Because you talked about someone like Forrest can turn up for the pre-season games as a way of getting him through his fitness level.
Yeah.
Someone like, you know, to pick on him again, Johnny Hayes, he must know that he's got to prove himself at the pre-season games.
Yeah.
So what did you think of some of our fringe players at the pre-season games that you were at?
The first game, obviously, it was that weird one where, I mean, it was a proper pub team. Was it Pinkerfeld or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, you can tell from the ground, they're a tiny club. And you've got that weird thing where you've got players that are meant to be big time, you know, Scott Sinclair, for example, maybe even Christie. Christie wasn't very good that day. You're playing against a pub team, so you should take the piss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a real good footballer against amateurs, you should make them look like amateurs and you should look like a superstar. And basically in the first half of that day, we didn't do that. You know, it could have been playing against anyone. We could have been anyone, and it was only in the second half when we brought on Henderson and Johnson, and who's the other one? The one from Arsenal,
Okoflex.
Okoflex. It was only they made the pub team look like a pub team. Now that might have been due to, I guess, energy levels.
You know, but that's the point I was going to make. Okoflex being a fringe player, he decided to go out and demonstrate that he deserves consideration for the first team squad.
Yeah. So all those kids did better than the guys that were in position before the game. But, you know, there's several reasons that could have been the case. I thought it was funny that both the goals we let in against, the one against Pinkerfeld and the one against Vienna, were both hoofed free kicks from distance, which I think is an undervalued thing. I mean, I'd shoot on sight. You know, that'd be club policy for me. If you basically, if you're in their half, you know, just gun it, you know, because you know the keeper might spill it. And I was annoyed to see the young lad Hazard, who, you know, the whisper is that he's a good keeper and you know the club rate him very highly. Yeah, that was his chance to impress, and he spills one, and we let in a stupid goal against the pub team. So that's no good. But then I think in the next game, was it Bain? I think Bain. I don't know if it was Bain or Gordon, I can't remember. But that was a hoofed free kick as well. It wasn't even top corner. You know, it was just right down the middle, right down his throat, and it managed to go in as well. So we kind of, you know, a weak spot there, maybe failure to react by players around them or what. But yeah, so we were basically letting the same stupid goal. But we scored some nice goals. I was pleased to see Griffiths get a goal in Vienna. What was quite funny, I was watching the highlights on the Celtic YouTube, and what they left out was Lee Griffith's miss. Like, I'm all for confidence building, and I understand he's coming back from a dark place, but he missed a proper sitter. You know, I think it was Sinclair put it on a dish right in front of the goal. And it's just classic Celtic TV that it disappears from the highlights. It's like, why is it not there? It should be there. It was one of the highlights. It was a shocking miss. But then minutes later, he then, you know, chased down the goalkeeper and rolled one in. I think that kind of, that piece of the puzzle might explain his celebration. You know, he's got a kind of sort of angry kind of, oh, at least I've scored celebration. Yeah. You know, you take out the miss, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. But yeah, just so you know, yeah, he missed a sitter. Anyway, and then Bayo. Oh, I've forgotten about Bayo until this conversation. That was a lovely finish. That was a great finish. Because it was barely a half chance. It was fizzed in behind him, I think, by Johnny Hayes. Again, that wasn't a great delivery. That was just a ball into the box. And Bayou buried it really well. Hopefully that's what he's capable of.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the challenge he's got is he's been injured. And now he's injured again. So, we just need to see... We just need to see how he... Sort of... You're getting people... Nobody... You're not hearing stuff where people are... Like, I am hearing people saying, wait till you see Shved. You're going to love him.
I forgot he existed, yeah.
He's got pace to burn, and he's got skills. You know, somebody at Celtic actually said, who's the guy in your podcast that that pines for Paddy Roberts? Or St. Anthony. Oh, he's going to love Shved. Shved's a better player than Paddy Roberts.
There you go. To go back to the game against the pub team, he started that one, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I'd completely forgot he played, but you know I was picking on Sinclair and Christie for doing nothing, but Shved played that game and did nothing, absolutely nothing. And what I was saying earlier about we should force Edouard to watch Henrik Larsson videos, he should be forced to watch Nakamura videos all day long. Do you know what I mean? If he's a left footer on the right,
yeah,
and he needs to learn how to retain possession and move his body and basically never give the ball away, which is what Nakamura did for 4 years, that's your template for how to play that role basically close to perfectly. You know, it's not just the free kicks that people like Strachan and probably Sean Maloney and others talk about how much of a genius Nakamura was. During it would be in small-sided games and stuff. It would be his absolute... genius at keeping the ball, rotating, moving the ball quickly, hitting passes at the right pace. You know, from that position, I loved Nakamura, and that's what he needs to become. Schwed needs to learn how to play that role. It's not just about getting a yard on your swinger and hoofing it. You need to help the team as well.
So is there anybody who particularly impressed you or particularly reinforced your prejudice against them in the pre-season games that you saw?
Mikey Johnson, when he came on against the pub team, he ran riot. I love how him and Henderson link up.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking last night how I was thinking about Simon Donnelly and McNamara. And anyone that remembers that,
see
the first season at the new Celtic Park, how it really was a sort of telepathic, week in, week out, brilliant thing to watch Donnelly and McNamara, 1-2s, balls over the top, really clever football,
Mm-hmm.
And then the idea that we could get a season with Tierney and Johnson down the left is just, I'd be so excited about that, And you're shaking your head. It's never going to happen. It's going to break my heart. Why can't we have two at once,
To annoy people and to pretend as if I know stuff, I'll tell you off podcast.
Right.
I don't know anything. So what are you looking for in signings that we're going to make in the next couple of weeks?
Need a right back. Definitely need to buy a right back. I'm really glad that we've splashed the cash, I love the stats, that basically Julian is Bobo Baldi, same age, same club,
same height,
same that. It's just like, right, that's exactly what I would do if I was in charge of Celtic's recruitment. I'd go out and buy Bobo Baldi, MK2. So yes, and if it costs a lot of money, do it, because we've already got goals up front. If we're going to continue with this whole one up front thing, which mm-hmm. it might be the case, do you really need three highly paid strikers? Not really. I've got faith in Griffiths, and I've got faith in Edward. I've got faith in all the row behind them, even to the point that I like the idea that Sinclair's the one fighting for his place. Because Sinclair will always score, mm-hmm. A player like Henderson is, further down the rung. Schwed, Morgan, all these guys I have faith in, if given the minutes, they would deliver over time.
Mm-hmm.
What I want is nobody guaranteed a place. Like I was saying earlier, and I include Forrest in that. Forrest shouldn't be guaranteed a place. Yep. Obviously, Forrest's going to start. But it should be a case of he can phone it in for 3 weeks and be guaranteed a play a game in the fourth week. You need to produce if there's people competing for the places.
Mm-hmm.
That entire second row behind the strikers, they should be like rats in a barrel.
Argument as to what turned Forrest into the player that he now is was having Paddy Roberts.
Yeah.
Because actually, in Paddy Roberts' final season with Celtic, when he wasn't injured, Forrest kept him out of the team on merit.
Yeah, yeah. Totally played him out of the team. So that's a good thing that we have competition in that position, and that's why I don't think we need to invest there. Right. So if I'd spend all the money that we're going to spend, which is probably going to be a disappointing number, but maybe we'll splash the cash. We've gone out and bought a good centre-half. I'd go out and buy a second good centre-half. It's funny, before the game, I would have said, I'm happy with Jozo, Ayer, and Julian. Mm-hmm. And now I'm thinking, I'm happy with Julian and Ayer, played in proper position. Am I still happy with Jozo as a third choice? Yes. I'd be happier with Jozo as a fourth choice. That would be good. So a right back, maybe another centre half. And then, I don't need much beyond that. Like at the start of the summer, the last time I was on the podcast, I was in the Turnbull camp. I would go and buy the best young player in Scotland, you know, the player of the year.
Yeah.
Every time, I've no issue with that policy. But now, if you ask me, would I rather Henderson get a chance? Yes. I'd rather we just go with our own guy. Considering the minutes are going to be limited regardless, because we have quite a lot of players in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best thing we've done as a club is flush the toilet and get rid of all the junk.
We've got rid of about 15 people who were in the first team squad.
Yeah, that's good. That needed done. It was long overdue, so that's good.
Come to week through this, do you see us getting through to the next round?
Next round guaranteed. And I think I saw someone posted something about the most likely next opponent as well.
Yeah.
And they seemed, you know, that was nothing to worry about as well.
When do we play Rosenborg?
It'll be sometime between now and my birthday. It's not long away, but probably play them four times before October.
Yeah, the reason I say that is because just when we were about to come on the podcast, I put on Sky Sports News just in case there was any shock transfer news or anything like that. And Rosenborg were playing Linfield.
All right.
Tonight, and they won 2-0.
Oh, good, good.
And I thought, Rosenborg. When are we due to play them? Because that's the problem with the current setup of the elite teams are getting their position reinforced across leagues. You know, us winning 9 in a row, 10 in a row, whatever, because we've just got more money than every other club in Scottish football. And it's the same replicated throughout Europe, which then means you're starting to get the same teams that we're Carabag, Rosenborg. It's the same teams over and over again. So, anyway, on that, I will, because I didn't want to make this too long a podcast.
Okay.
I will say, because I'm going to do another podcast after, hopefully, after we get through against Sarajevo and the draw is done, I will say, Anthony Money, thanks very much.
Okay, right. I'm back on Twitter, by the way, so if anyone wants to give me abuse.
Yes, put your Twitter handle up, because I've started following you.
Anthony Murray 25. A reference to Celtic's greatest number 25, Thomas Ronja.
And people can go on there and say, you're talking pish about Scott Brown as a right back.
Yeah, looking forward to it. He'll give me something to do in work tomorrow.
Okay. Right. Hey, cheers.
Hail, hail. Bring me
sunshine in your smile. So there you go, we've had our end of season review, and that's the first podcast officially of the 2019-2020 season. We will, of course, be doing the Celtic Underground Top 10. The votes are starting to come in already. We will do last year's Top 10 as part of the this year's Top 10 review. So if you want to vote on your Top 10 Celtic players of last season, go to podcast, or email in, I should say, podcasts, 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 plural, at CelticUnderground.net. It's at podcast at CelticUnderground.net. Also put your Samaras moment, that special moment in the season. I'm sure it won't be the day you woke up and found out that Brendan Rodgers was leaving, but anyway, your special moment of the season. So that's podcast at CelticUnderground.net and your Samaras moment. Get those in, and we will have the Celtic Underground Top 10 announced before the domestic campaign commences. Anyway, that was me, Harry Brady, with him, Anthony Murray, who you can now follow on Twitter and give him loads of abuse. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Goodnight. To each brand new bright tomorrow, make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter. Oh.
all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me.